We started a few days ago, almost a week ago, and we never finished that discussion of the Evan Ha'azal, the Rosh Hashiva of Eitz Chaim Yeshiva back in Europe, in Slutsk, in Kletsk. It was Rabbi Zalman Meltzer, one of the giants, and perhaps amongst the, I would say, three or four top Talmidim of Rabbi Chaim Brisker. So that's what we want to continue on now. And we're following Rav Zevin in his Ishim V'Shitot. And we're looking here on page 350. We're about halfway through page 350. And our goal is to make it to page 355. Okay. We discussed briefly yesterday, but we didn't have a chance to finish it, the Rambam in Hilchas Gzeilav HaVeda. You'll see it here noted in footnote number 27 on the bottom of page 350. And the Rambam has a case, and no one seems to know where he got it from. And that is where the animal jumped out of the corral, somehow it got free, you found the animal, and the Rambam says you can return the animal to that corral, and your potter, you have fulfilled your obligation of the mitzvah hashavas aveda. Why? Because the mitzvah hashavas aveda, says the Rambam, does not require das bailim; it only requires hashava. In other words, in the case of a normal shomer, when I return the object back to the mafkid, I have to notify him, here it is, come and take it. The Gemara has exceptions where if I leave it on his front door when he's going to go out in the morning to work, I can assume he'll find it. But as a general rule, we require das bailim. The exception to this rule is hashavas aveda. But one thing that Hashavas Aveda requires, which is common to any shomer who gives back the object that he was deposited in his possession, is Makom HaMishtamer. He's got to place it in a place where it will be protected. Now, this animal broke loose. How did it break loose? If it broke through the front door, then you can't expect the Rambam to say, we can't justify the Rambam saying that just returned it into the corral with a broken door, and that will fulfill the mitzvah Hashavas Aveda. We need a Makom HaMishtamer. If the door is broken, that's not called a Makom HaMishtamer. And therefore, Rabbi Zalman assumes that the Rambam's case is that the animal broke out in a very unusual sort of way. It either climbed over the roof, over the fence, or it maybe burrowed a tunnel underneath the fence. And yet, the Rambam says that you can return it to that place where the animal got out of. And the chiddush here is that even though this animal has proven itself on one occasion to be above incarceration, I'm looking for a different word, but in other words, the fact that we locked it up and we closed it did not do it justice. In other words, it was not sufficient protection for this animal. Nevertheless, since it's a Makom HaMishtamer, the place itself is fenced around, that's enough of a Chiyuv Hashava. So again, let's just to see the derech of Rabbi Zalman, we have here two elements in this Chiddush, but we're going to add a very important third element, which we haven't addressed yet. Number one, he analyzes the Rambam and tries to figure out what the Rambam's chiddush is. And he comes up with by excluding one possibility, the law of elimination of that possibility, namely that the animal broke through the front door, he comes up with the real pshat, the correct pshat in the Rambam. That's only on one level where Rabbi Zalman is analyzing the Rambam and the case of the Rambam. Now we have a second level, and that is to define the chiddush of this halacha. Okay, we now have the case of the halacha, now what's the chiddush? And there's a great chiddush here, that in Hashavas Aveda, I just have to return it to a Makom HaMishtamer. If objectively, that's called a protected place, it's fenced around, I don't have to figure out the psychology of this animal and its super abilities to break out of a fence that normally would be enough to keep it guarded. But now Rabbi Zalman wants to get to a third level. And the third level is, where did the Rambam get this from? Meaning, unless the Rambam has a source, the Rambam can't. The rare occasions where the Rambam says Yiroa Li, meaning the Rambam says I don't have any proof whatsoever, and it's a scenario which, you know, drives the human mind crazy. You know, you have to figure out what to do and what the halacha should say in such a case, and the Rambam will write Yiroa Li. But those are very rare and far between. As a 99.9% rule, we always assume that every Rambam has a source to it. And now that Rabbi Zalman has revealed the chiddush here, something that you and I would not have said, you know, intuitively, namely that you could return the animal even though the animal got out once from this fence, but that's enough, a kiyum of Hashavas Aveda. Where did the Rambam get this from? And this perhaps is the greatest chiddush of Rabbi Zalman. He finds a Gemara, you'll see it number 29 on your page, which is in Bava Metzia Lamed Beis, and he finds that this Gemara could possibly be the source for the Rambam. And this is a big chiddush. The Rambam says, I'm sorry, the Gemara says the following. Chaval, I didn't bring a Gemara Bava Metzia. I was too busy eating my lunch. But the moral of the story is we should all be fasting, Alan, not just you. Right? Yeah. Okay, so the Gemara says, Mishtameres, right, that there's a halacha that you have to return, a shomer has to return the object to a place that is a chatzer ha-mishtameres, it's protected. It's not just an open backyard, you know. In the case of an animal, the animal could just run away if it's not fenced off. The Gemara says, Hashta Mishkachle Ibrai. If you find it on the outside, Mi'ayil Ligavoi, then you will bring the animal back inside in order to return it. Is Mishkach Ligavoi Miboi? How much more so in the case that he found the animal inside an area? Okay, I don't have the Gemara in front of me, but the language of the Gemara is very interesting. Yeah? You know what? Do me a favor, John. In this case, bring me... I usually use the Masifta, but we don't have Masifta above Metzia. Bring me the English translation, if you can. But you have to keep in mind, it's above Metzia Daf Lamed Beis. So it might be with two stars on it, if you know what I mean. It's good. So the Gemara uses the language, Mi'ayil Gavoi... Miboy, meaning if he brings it back inside, it's upgaret, meaning it's understood that he was Mekayim a mitzvah of Hashava. The Gemara there is really talking about something totally different. But from the Gemara, you could be medayik the Rambam's conclusion. Thank you. Let's see if we can find it. What did we say? It was Lamed Beis Amud Aleph? Okay, we'll see if we... It's actually the first volume. You never know on in any occasion where, you know, where they'll start. Sorry to bother you.
But Rebbe, does that mean that you have to, when you in Shabbos Aveda, you have to bring it back to a better condition than it even was before?
No, on the contrary. In a certain sense, you're really replacing, thank you, the object to where you found it.
Right, but I mean, so if you found it without it with the gate open,
oh,
so
that's
why do you have to close the gate?
No, because that's not mishtamer. You know, if the gates are open, if he, you know, like imagine an ox that just rammed through and opened the entire gate.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's a gaping hole now in the gate. That's not a makom mishtamer. It's impossible that the Rambam would be suggesting that if the animal got out in that way, that was the way it was barucha, that you could return the animal to a place that's not mishtamer. One thing is absolutely clear, and that is that we need to return it to a makom mishtamer. So let me just read this Gemara to you. He says the following. Right, the Mishnah says that if you found an animal, okay, I called it a corral, I think, he calls it a barn.
Okay.
So He's saying that if the animal is in a barn, it's considered shamur. That means it's not considered a lost. The Gemara is actually addressing a whole different question, not hashava per se, but the chiyuv of the mitzvah. When are you obligated? What's considered aveda? Let's put it that way. If you consider a certain situation as aveda, then someone's animal is lost, then obviously you have to jump in and return that animal. So the Gemara thinks, based on the Mishnah, that in the case of a refes, which he calls a barn, right? The Rambam didn't use the word refes, did he? Let me just see. The Rambam's language was... just where is it?
Deer.
Just one second. I'd love to see the Rambam inside. We don't have the Rambam here, but Rabbi Hema Barcha min Adir. Okay, min Adir. Here he says a refes. So I don't know if there's a difference here in that sense, but in any event, in the case of a refes, so the Gemara says that if you found an animal in a refes, a barn, then it's not considered lost. Amar Rava, refes sha'amru, when the Mishnah speaks about a barn, eino mas'eh. Okay? It says, in other words, we don't assume that there's anything in that barn that's going to cause the animal to run away. On the other hand, the eino mishtameres. The animal could leave if it wishes to do so because it's not fenced off. So we have a barn that's not fenced. The animal could go in and out. But on the other hand, we don't assume that the animal is going to run astray. So Rava says the following. Eino mas, how do I know that there's nothing to incite the animal to run away? Midikatani eino chayev ba. Which means that you're not chayev in hashava. And if there was something in the barn that would cause the animal to run out of the barn, then that would certainly be an aveda. You'd have to return it. On the other hand, eino mishameres. There's nothing forcing the animal to stay inside the barn. Otherwise, if the animal is completely incarcerated, the barn is surrounded by high walls, then for sure it's not an aveda. The Mishnah would not be telling me a chiddush. And now Rava expands upon this last point. To Isal Kedaktav Mishameres, if you're going to say that the barn has protection to it, is then the Gemara says, if this barn is something that protects the animal from leaving, then Pshita. It's obvious. The Mishnah wouldn't have to be telling me anything. Why? Hashta mishkachle ibrai. If one finds an animal outside, let's say it's out in the pasture land, is ma'ayale legavai, then he's obligated to bring it into the owner's barn. Correct? Because again, he found it outside the barn, in the pasture land. Is mishkach la migavoy miboy? Is it necessary for the Mishnah to tell you that if he finds that the animal is already inside such a barn, that he's not chayiv in hashava? I mean, hashava, if he found it outside the barn, is to bring it back into the barn. And therefore it's obvious that if the animal is inside the barn, then he doesn't have to return it. It's not lost. So the answer must be that if the animal was found outside, then you're only allowed to, you can only fulfill your obligation of hashava if the inside of the barn is protected and he brings it back inside a protected barn. In this case, mishkachas le migavoy miboy, certainly if he found it inside the barn, he's not chayiv in hashava. So what is his chayiv hashava? His chayiv hashava is when he found the animal outside the barn and he brings it back into the barn. Now, how did the animal get outside the barn? So Mr. Zalman says, apparently the Rambam derived from this Gemara that even though we're talking about a barn that's eino mishtameres, nevertheless, and the animal in fact got outside the barn, nevertheless he could return it inside the barn. That's the source for the Rambam. And even though the animal got outside the barn, which means that it was able to figure out a way of getting out, nevertheless, the Gemara says you can bring it back inside the barn, and as though, which means that even if I had an animal that was in a barn, and the barn is not confined, do you follow what I mean? It's not fenced off, I would not be chayv in the mitzvah shava. And the answer is that even though it's eino shamur, it's enough of a shmira for the animal to be outside the parameters of the mitzvah hashava, and therefore if it's enough shamur for that, that it prevents it inhibits the emergence of the mitzvah hashava, then that kind of a barn, that kind of a shmira would be enough for hashava as well. So again, just to make the point here, Rav Zeman is using this chiddush of Rabbi Zalman in Hilchas Gezela to illustrate that Rabbi Zalman does three things. He has three responsibilities. Number one, he's responsible to interpret the Rambam, what exactly the words of the Rambam mean, what is the case of the Rambam. Number two, to explain why the Rambam felt compelled to be machadish this chiddush. That's how we have to answer the Rambam. And number three, finally, to find the source for the Rambam. So if we were writing a paper, you know, a scholarly work on the Rambam, and we would ask ourselves, based on the Gedol Yisrael, the Rosh Yeshiva that came before us, what would be our goal, our responsibility to write a work, a super commentary on the Rambam, the answer is the goal would be threefold. Number one, first tell me, Taich. You know, tell me what the Rambam's talking about. Analyze it, go back and forth. The Rambam doesn't always spell it out. The Rambam is very general sometimes. He doesn't give you all the specifics. Second responsibility. Once you know exactly what the Rambam is talking about, you must ask yourself the question, why did the Rambam feel compelled? What is the chiddush of the Rambam? And the third responsibility is to find the source of the Rambam. Very often the Magid Mishnah, or sometimes you look in the Migdal Oz, they'll tell you the source of the Rambam. Today we also have the Frankel edition of the Rambam that has the Tziyunim on the Makoros V'Tziyunim on the side.
So
Rabbi Zalman said that in many cases you look into the Mefarshim, you look into the Magid Mishnah, and so forth, and you don't find the source for the Rambam. Then it's your responsibility to come up with the source for the Rambam.
So basically, the lack of understanding of the Rambam is an aveda, and you're being made
right.
Achieve it.
Right.
Right. These three things.
He says the following. Let's take a look at the Rambam. This is footnote number 32 on the same page in Hilchas Avodim. And the Rambam there in Perek Tes Hilchas Avodim tells us that if a woman gets married and she's the owner of an Eved, the Eved is Nichse Malug, we'll explain what that means, then the husband becomes Chayav Bimzonosehem. Okay. Now, David, let me try to explain what Nitzei Malug is, because this is a bit complicated, and truth be told, we would need a half hour, so I'm going to give it to you in the tip of the iceberg, see if you can catch. There's something called a Kinyan Aguf, and then there's something called Kinyan Peros, which means that if I own a field, I can sell you the rights to the produce of the field. That's called a Kinyan Peros, that all you own is the rights to take the Peros. In the context of marriage, that's called nichse maluk, which means, let's say, I'll give you the following example. A woman owns an apartment as a single girl. She bought it, she inherited it. Now she gets married. In the context of the ksuba, you as her husband have what's called a kinyan peros. You can enjoy the benefits of that apartment. Let's say it's a flat that could be rented at 5,000 shekel a month. You as her husband rent out the apartment and you pocket the 5,000 shekel. There's another category of possessions which is called nichsei tzom barzel, and there we evaluate the possession at the time of the marriage and we write down that value in the ksuba, and now that possession, that object goes into your rishus as the husband. You own it now, full ownership, kinyan aguf, kinyan peros. You'll just, in event of a divorce, or if you die and she inherits you, she gets back that original evaluation. That's nichsei tzom barzel. So we're talking now about nichsei maluk. Did I get that right? Yeah, nichsei maluk. Okay. Now, here's the issue. Who has to support this Eved. All the work that the Eved does and its value accrues to the Baal. Why? Because she owns the goof and he owns the peiros. So let's say the Eved works at, let's say, a daily wage of 10 per day. So that 10 is the possession of the husband. He doesn't have to reimburse his wife. That's called Nisei Muluk. But who's going to have to support the Eved? The Eved has to eat 3 meals a day. He needs a roof on his head. That might even be more than the wages. So the Rambam says that the husband, insofar as he gets to eat the peiros, he has to support the Eved. So the Ravid says the following: Lo nisbarli davar zeh. He says, who says that the Baal is obligated in mizonos? He says, there was a takanas chachamim in the context of marriage, right? All of the laws of the ksuba are rabbinic ways of what I call quid pro quo, meaning she does this for him and he does this for her. And the Rabbanan sort of worked out a balance so they could have a soft landing in this marriage, right? Now, while it's true that the Chazal made a takana called Nichse Malug, which means that with the exception of Nichse Tzombazel, but all other Nechasim are, you know, the Baal gets the Kenyan Peros, you know, that was a takana on behalf of the Baal. Litovaso. The Baal, if he incurs a loss as a result of this takon, has the right to say, I'm out of here, I don't want, you know, don't force upon me schuyot, you know, new rights and privileges if I'm going to end up with a loss. If it may cost more to feed the Eved than what the Eved works in the house. And not only that, maybe the husband will say, I'm not interested in his working in the house, and all sorts of different scenarios. So the Ravid is upset here. He doesn't understand what gave the Rambam the audacity to obligate the husband in the context of Nichse Malug to support the Eved. Lonis Barley Dover Zeh. And the Baal could say, you know what? As we say in modern Hebrew, Lo Miyuktsach Lo Midufshach. You know, I'm Michael on the covenant of having the Eved, but I don't want to support the Eved. The Kesef Mishnah says the following: Dvarim shall tam him. Now, whenever you see those words in the Kesef Mishnah, that the Rambam is saying something logical, you derive the following conclusion. This is what we call Hodas Baal Din, that the Kesef Mishnah admits that he doesn't know where the Rambam got it from. Because if he knew where the Rambam got it from, he doesn't have to argue with the Ravid and defend the Rambam by saying Dvarim shel Tam. It makes sense. He just could have quoted the source. If it's a Gemara here, a Gemara there, you know, we have a lot of sugyos and shas about ksuvas. We have a whole masechta dedicated to ksuvas. Nichsei Malug is not an unusual case in shas. Apparently, the Kesef Mishnah couldn't find a source for it. Not only that, there's another super commentary on the Rambam called the Radbaz, who was a contemporary of the Kesef Mishnah. In fact, they overlap both in Egypt at a certain period of time, but the Radbaz remained in Egypt, and Beis Yosef made Aliyah to Tzfat. Anyway, he also says that he couldn't find the source for the Rambam. The Magid Mishnah in Hilchus Ishus, where the Rambam repeats this halacha, he also says that the source for the Rambam is some Mishnah in Yevamos on Daf Tes Vav. So the Vilna Gaon writes that he looked in the Mishnah on Daf Tes Vav, he didn't find anything. So the Magid Mishnah fooled us. He pulled the wool over our eyes, so to speak. He quotes the source, and the source hot mitzitan, as we say. It doesn't have, it's not void of impolitics. It doesn't have anything to do with it. So the Eben Ozel says, let's not accuse the Magid Mishnah of a total misleading situation. He made one mistake. It's not a Mishnah in Yevamos, it's a Tosefta in Yevamos. And with tremendous scholarship, he comes up with a source for the Rambam in the Tosefta in Yevamos, that you'll see annotated here on number 36, is in the sixth parak of Yevamos. And it says over there, Elu vi Elu, Habal Chayav Bimzono Sehem. Now again, what's Elu vi Elu? If the Eved was Nichsei Tzom Barzel, then who owns the Eved? The husband owns the Eved. For sure he has to support the Eved. So what does the Mishnah, what does the Braisa mean in the Tosef? What says Elu V'Elu? It means even this they will look. So it means that the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon, couldn't find the source for this Rambam. The Kesef Mishnah couldn't find the source for the Rambam. The Radbaz couldn't find the source for the Rambam. The Magid Mishnah quoted a source which doesn't exist. I mean, the Mishnah exists, but it has nothing to do with an Eved. And the Eved also found this Rambam. Here Rav Zevin goes off on a tangent. He's very fascinated. You know, one of the most exciting things for historians about analyzing the Rambam, it's not usually done in the yeshiva, but it's done more in a university context, is what did the Rambam have in front of him? What were the books in the Rambam's library? We know, for example, that the Rambam had an extensive library. This is way before printing, you know, 500 years before the printing press. So it was all manuscripts. Manuscripts were very expensive, but the Rambam must have had an unbelievable collection, because the Rambam is not limited just to Shas, Bavli, and Yerushalmi. He has sources from all over the place. Sifra, Sifri, Psikta, Mechilta, Amster, Abnasin, you name it. And one of the sources of the Rambam, which has become a whole issue of contention, is the Gaonim. Did the Rambam have in front of him the writings of the Gaonim? And Rabbi Zalman wants to prove, you see that in Rosh Yeshiva sometimes is also, you know, I call it Toru Mada, you know, he's also interested in the science of it, in the history of it. He wants to prove that the Rambam was influenced by Rav Chai Gaon. Now Rav Chai Gaon authored a book on Mamonos, on Choshen Mishpah, which is called Sefer Mekach. And he says, if you take a look in the Sefer Mekach, you will find a source for the Rambam. That the Rav Chai Gaon in the Sefer Mekach actually writes that the husband is chayev to support the Nichsei, the Eved, who's Nichsei Malug, of his wife, his wife's Eved. So this, he says, has tremendous historical impacts on all the historians that study the Rambam. They want to know who influenced the Rambam. And Rabbi Zalman wants to say that Rav Chai Gaon was very much on the list. And somebody later, his name is Rav Asaf, I heard his name, I don't think he's alive anymore, but he came up with 10 other Rambams, besides Rav Zalman's Rambam, where he believes the Rambam based himself on Rav Chai Gaon.
According to this Rambam, if the husband, let's say, enjoys the fruits of a tree, is he responsible for the tree being fertilized?
Correct. Excellent. You want to enjoy the fruits of the tree? Yeah. You got to support the tree. Excellent. Now he has another case where Rabbi Zalman is interested in history. There are many different commentaries which are attributed to the Ravid. I'll mention three of them. The most famous of them are the Hasogas HaRaivin on the Rambam. There's also Hasogas HaRaivin on the Rif, especially Masechta Pesachim. You have to learn it very well, very carefully. And then there's a Sefer of the Raivin, which is called the Balei HaNefesh. And the historians debate whether or not it's the same Raivin. So for example, the Malbushe Yontif, if I'm not mistaken, his name was Heller, if I'm
wrong.
Yeah. So anyway, he lived about 150, 200 years ago, and he claims that he found the stira between the Ravid and Hasogas, and the Hasogas on the Rambam, and the Ravid and Hasogas on the Rif. So the Malbushe Yontif says it's not a kasha. Ein ze oso a Ravid. Utrei Ravid. There were two Gedolim who lived about the same time, whose name was Rabbeinu Avraham ben David. And we should not mistakenly assume that both are the same. The Eben Ozel was not aware of this Malbushe Yontif, as far as we know, but yet he proves in his own writings that it's the same Ravid. And he brings many proofs that the Ravid who authored this book authored that book, because he compares the Lashonos and the Shittos of the Ravid. And I myself, again, I can't do this for you now, but I myself have many proofs that it's the same Ravid. If you study the Ravid, you'll see it's the same author. Okay, now, if you turn to page 352, Rav Zevin is interested in a very attractive commentary on Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's life and his Derech HaLibut. because towards the end of his life, he left Litta, he settled in Eretz Yisrael, he was the Rosh Yeshiva here in Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, which is probably a half hour walk from here, if that much. In fact, that's where Rav Tikhachinsky was a Rebbe. They say that that was the end of the Yishuv of Yerushalayim. So some people today will celebrate, will observe 2 days of Yontif here in Eretz Yisrael if they're behind the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva. If they're in front of the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, they'll only celebrate 1 day Yontif. Anyway, that's on the side. I'm getting off on a tangent. In any event, what happened to Rav Issa Zalman Meltzer when he settled here in Yerushalayim? So he writes in the introduction to his last volume of the Evan HaUzal that he always was interested in Kachim, and he dabbled a little bit in Kachim, and now that he's here in Eretz HaKodesh, and there are a number of Gedolim here in the land of Israel who are learning Kachim, I too am going to write a work of my insights on Kachim. So maybe there's hope for all of us, because we all aspire to learn, as the Litvaks call it, Kudzim. And we're getting on in years, but, you know, Mrs. Zalman was no youngster. Mrs. Zalman died, I think he was 95 or so, something like that. He was a very old man. And he dedicated himself to Kudzim. But it's very interesting. When he was a Rosh Yeshiva back in Litta, when he was in Kletsk, he was in Slutsk, he was learning Noshim Nezikin. And there, he felt that since in the yeshiva world, in Litta, they were so, the Talmidim was so familiar, they were so, how do you say, orangutan, absorbed in Noshim Nezikin, that he felt as a Rashiva, in order to give something to them, he would have to say Shiurim with Pilpulim and Chidushim and so forth. In fact, there's a famous story, Rav Zeman doesn't tell the story, that somebody came up to Rabbi Zalman after one of his shiur back in Litta and said, what's the hechrech to say such a chiddush? So he said, the shiur is the hechrech. In any event, here he says, now I came to Eretz Yisrael, and the territory of Kachim is, he calls it Karka Basula, nobody has touched this, it's a whole new limud. Now I'm going to just say pshat. Just give you the insights straightforward, without any pilpulim, just dvarim pshutim, he says. So let's take a few examples of Rabbi Zalman Meltzer's chidushim, his insights into kachim and Evan Ozel, and see what he means by dvarim pshutim. Okay?
I think he came before the briskers.
He's a Talmud. Oh, no,
he's
a contemporary of Velma. I don't know who actually landed first. Yeah. I don't even know who died first. Actually, I can tell you. Now, I don't want to waste too much time. Let's see, he died in Tafshin Yud Dalit. He died 6 years before the Brisker Rav. Anyway, so now listen to Dvarim Pshutim in Kachim. We're going to start with the Rambam. It's number 41 on in the footnote, page 352. Perek Aleph Milchus Beis HaBechir HaLocha Yud Zayin. The Rambam writes that if you destroy a stone, we have to figure out where exactly the stone is located, but somewhere in the Beis HaMikdash, then you get Malkus for that. That's a lav of Lotasim Kein Lashem Elokecha. So the Rambam says that this stone for which you get Malkus is located in one of three places. Either it's a stone that is part of the Mizbeach, you know, the Mizbeach was made of stones, or it's a Mizbeach inside the Heichal, which is the Kodshim, the Kodesh Kodashim, you know, where the, right near the Kodesh Kodashim, or between the Ulam and the Mizbeach, which is basically in that very sanctified area of the, between the Heichal and the Mizbeach. But the Rambam repeats himself earlier, and this you'll see in number 42, in Hilchos Yisodi HaTorah Perek Vav. But look what he says there. The Rambam says, Hasosra fiu even achas derech hashchasa min ha-mizbeach o min ha-hechal o mishar ha-zora. Now watch this. Shar ha-zora is way outside of Ulam u-mizbeach. The Azor is a much larger area. And the Mishnah in Kalim, which is called the Mishnah of Malos, you know, that goes through the Eser Malos, has Mina Ulam Mizbeach in a very high Mala. You're already getting close to the Heichal itself, whereas the Azor is lower down on the list. So the Rambam is an open contradiction to himself, black on white. In Hilchos Beis HaBechira, he doesn't mention the Azorah, and you only get Malkus if you violate this Lav, Mina Ulam Lamizbeach. Masha'enkin in Hilchos Yisodi HaTorah, the Rambam says you get Malkus even if you destroyed an Evan in the Azorah. So what's going on? So in order to explain Pshat, Rav Yisrael Salman says, notice another discrepancy between the two Rambams, and you can miss it. In Beis HaBechira, the Rambam says, Hanotates Eved. Evan, excuse me. In Hilchos Yisodi HaTorah, he says, Hasoter Evan. What's the difference between Netitza and Stira? So he says the following. This is fascinating. Stira is the opposite of Binyan. All over Shas. When something is connected to the ground, if it's absolutely connected to the ground, and you remove it from the ground, the word that you use is soser. There's another word called netitza. Netitza means to smash something. It doesn't mean that that object is definitely mechubar lekarka. It could be even if it's ain't a mechubar lekarka. If you destroy it, that's called netitza. Right? So for example, if you go to a dentist, right, in order to pull your wisdom teeth, so that's called stira, right? Because the tooth is in the roots, right? It's in the under the gums. But if on the other hand I have a tooth here on the table and I would smash it, that's called netitza. So he says the following. Okay, I'm just gonna read this very quickly. So say Pirusha, so say Mokum Chiburo. Right, but notates is etzem adavar who notates. Afilum kfar hotzia mimkoma litzorech. Now, why would you take out a stone that's in the ground of the Migdash? Maybe you need it for the sake of the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach needs another stone. So you're again, you have to know about Milan the Kodesh Vol Marid, but that's not for us. So right now we're describing two scenarios, and the two Rambams are addressing two different scenarios. Scenario number one is where you remove the Evan from its Makom Chibur. Scenario number two is where the Evan, the stone, was already removed from its Makom Chibur, and it's called Tlusha, right? Tlusha. The Rambam holds that the Ikar of the Beis HaMikdash, as far as the ultimate Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash, is Min HaMizbeach Ulefnim. Right, so the Azor is here, if I draw a diagram, the Mizbeach is here, and then the Heichal. So from the Mizbeach, beginning with the Mizbeach and on, inwards, as we move inwards towards the Kodesh Kodashim, that's called the Ikar HaMikdash. And the Rambam codifies this in Hilchas Bias Migdash Perek Vav, because you know there are all sorts of dinim when you're allowed to go into the Migdash and when you're not allowed to go in. And the Rambam says that the Ikra Migdash for Dinei and Isurei Bias Migdash is Min HaMizbeach Ulifnin. He says the following. Notates, when you get to the point of someone who actually destroys an Evan, then you're expanding the lav to apply to even something that's already tlusha. Says the Rambam, if it's already tlusha, if it's already been removed from its connection to the ground of the Mikdash, how does it retain its holiness such that now there's an isur lav if you destroy it? The answer is because it was part of the Kodesh, which means it was from the Ulam, from the Mizbeach, and onwards. So an Evan shenitlusha min Azara, on the other hand, if let's say this Evan was only in the Azara, so it only has a lower level of Kedusha, is then the Evan has a Shem Migdash as long as it's affixed to the ground of the Azara. But once you remove it from the ground of the Azara, and it becomes Tlusha, there's no longer an Iser of Netitza. So when the Rambam speaks about Soser, it means that you're talking about mechubar. Any evan that's mechubar, even if it's only mechubar to the azara, has the kedusha of the azara, and the Torah prohibits you from uprooting the evan. But if the evan has already been detached and it's now a tlusha, then where was it attached to begin with? You want to maintain and retain the same kodesh, the same kodesh, even after it's detached and generated an iser of netitsa. That only applies if it was in the mikdash itself, meaning the shpitz, the most intense part of kedushas hamikdash. Now I want you to move on to page 353. And he says the following. Rabbi Zalman, in his approach to the Rambam, was very much a Talmud of Reb Chaim. When the Ravid, you know, writes a Hasoga and he attacks the Rambam, everybody until Reb Chaim is interested in saving the Rambam. You know, you have to protect the Rambam and find the teretz to the Ravid. That wasn't Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim wasn't interested in far-entering the Rambam and defending him. Reb Chaim was interested in going down to the roots of the machlokas. What was the Ravid thinking about a certain issue, and what was the Rambam thinking about that same issue? And he says the following, that Rabbi Zalman did the same thing in his volume on Kodshim. What happens here? There's a machlokas, the Rambam, and the Ravid. Okay, here's the case. The menorah was located where? In the Heichal. Here's the case. They took the menorah outside of the Heichal. And the Kohen outside the Heichal did what's called the Hatovas HaNeros. So everything was prepared for that Hadlaka. And the Rambam says at this point, Muta Lazar LaHadlikon. A non-Kohen is allowed to light the menorah. Says the Ravid, Omar Avram, Hiflik. The Rambam went way too far. Kshomar Muta Lazar LaHadlikon. Ela she'im hidlikon ksheros. What does it mean? We have a principle called hadloka lav avodahi. Every avoda requires a kohen. But hadloka, lighting the candles, is not an avoda. Therefore, it allows a zar, if he went ahead and he lit it, but you'll see l'chadchil he's not allowed to, but if he went ahead and he lit it, then the hadloka is ksher. Says Rabbi Zalman, What's the Shoresh HaMachlokas? Okay. He says the following. The Ravid elsewhere has a principle. And what is that principle? It works like this. That with regard to Avoda, whenever you have an Avoda, if the Avoda was done by a Zar, a non-Kohen, the Avoda is Psula. It's worthless. Sometimes you have a case which is not an avodah, but yet the Torah mentions the Kohen. And the Torah says that the Kohen should do this particular activity. And he says the following. Whenever the Torah is talking about something that's not an avodah, and this is all based on a sugyan, Zvachim Yudalim, and yet the Torah mentions the Kohen, says the Ravid, based on the sugyan, Zvachim, it's pretty clear from the Gemara itself, that L'chadchila, the Torah wants to tell you, you need a Kohen. But that's not ma'akev b'di'evet. In other words, even if it's not an avodah, the Torah, chukah, the Torah wants to require a Kohen. Says the Ravid, take a look at the mitzvah of hadlokas, ner shebemikdash. The parashat Baloscha opens up by saying, daber b'nei Yisrael v'elponov. So who's the Torah addressing to light the candles? To the Kohen. So even though hadlok is not an avodah, but nevertheless the Torah went out of its way to obligate the Kohen, which means lechatchila, even if it's not an avodah, the Kohen is obligated to do this mitzvah. How could the Rambam therefore go a step further and say that despite the fact that this mitzvah is addressing the Kohen nevertheless, I'm sorry, the Zar nevertheless is allowed to be madlik. If you're talking about b'di'evet, okay, fine. It's not an avodah. Hadlok lav avodah, b'di'evet, the Zar is kosher. But l'chadchila, the Torah says that this mitzvah is incumbent on the Kohen. Says Rabbi Zalman, why did the Torah address the Kohanim in the mitzvah of hadlok asaner, not to impose upon them the mitzvah exclusively, right? No, it's the exclusion of a Zar. But simply because the menorah is located where? In the Heichal. And who's allowed to go into the Heichal? A Kohen's allowed to go into the Heichal. A Zar is not allowed to go into the Heichal. Is Memela, the reason why the Torah mentions and addresses this mitzvah Adlaka to the Kohen, is because he's the only one who could enter into the Heichal. Correct? And by the way, even to the Azara, a Zar is not allowed to go in. How much more so to the Heichal, which as we said before, is holier than the Azara. Oh. Now we understand that the Rambam holds that if the menorah is taken outside of what? Outside of the Azara, then there's no need to impose the obligation of Adlok on a Kohen. It's not an Avodah. And even though the Torah addresses the Kohen, that's for technical reasons, because the Zar can't enter into the Azara. But now the menorah is outside of the Azara. Let the Zar light it. So what's the machlokas now between the Rambam and the Raivin? Says Rabbi Zalman, it's all a shitaso. The Mishnah in Masechta Kelim, at the beginning of Masechta Kelim, which presents the milos, you know, the different levels of kedusha of the Beis Hamikdash. I mean, it starts actually with Yerushalayim and it goes all the way up. It starts with Eretz Yisrael, goes all the way up till he gets to the Kodesh Kadoshim. Says the machlok between the Rambam and the Raivid in Hilchos Bias Migdosh, Perek Aleph, the Rambam holds that all those dinim of Milos are Do'oraisa. So in other words, when we say that a Zar is not allowed to enter into the Azara, that's a Do'oraisa halach. The Raivid happens to hold that these Milos are Derabbanan. I mean, it's like Milos of Yuchsin, like we saw once in Ksuvah. So here also, it's Milos. La Raivid, therefore, the Pasuk had to tell me, Hechrech mea Pasuk, Shetzarach Kohen l'chatchila l'adlokas haneros, meaning on a deraisa level, even the Zar could light the menorah. Ah, you'll tell me, but the menorah is located in the Heichal, that's all a derabbanan. But in the Torah, the Zar is allowed to go into the Heichal. If he's allowed to go into the Heichal, why did the Torah address this mitzvah to the Kohen? And the answer is because the mitzvah is incumbent on the Kohen. Masha Enkei, he says, according to the Rambam, who holds that all the milos are do'oraisa, and since hadlaka is not an avodah, so therefore the Zar is not capable of fulfilling this mitzvah because he can't enter in. So the Torah therefore addressed this mitzvah to a Kohen. But insofar as we would circumvent this problem of the Zar going into the Heichal, if the menorah is outside the Heichal, then Echinami, the Zar could be Madlik Lechatchila. Here's another case of Lishitoso. The Rambam and the Raivid are very consistent. Okay, Alan, I'm not going to take questions only because I'm on a roll and I want to get to page 355. I really should have started with page 355 because that's the most exciting piece of them all, but I'm hoping if we have 15 minutes we'll be able to finish it up. Okay, the Gemara at the end of Masechta Sukkah records a machlokas between the Chachamim and Abba Shaul, and it's a very fascinating machlokas. We're talking about Shavuos that coincides with Shabbos, and we're in the Beis HaMikdash. So we have two mitzvahs. On Shabbos, every Shabbos, is a mitzvah of Achilas Lechem Aponim. You remember that they put the Lechem Aponim on the Shulchan a week before, and then they would eat it, the mitzvah of Achilah was a week after on Shabbos. Now that Shavuos coincides with Shabbos, there's another mitzvah, and that's called Shteil Lechem. And it's Machlokas Tanoim, which comes first? Yeah, you and I might say, who cares which comes first? But in Torah, it's every single detail is critical. Which comes first? So here's the machlokas. On the one hand, the Gemara says we have a principle called Tadir, v'she'eno Tadir, Tadir Kodet. Now, Shteil Lechem is once a year. And I'm sorry, did I get that right?
Yeah.
And Lechem Aponim is every week. So therefore, the Lechem Aponim should come first. On the other hand, we have a principle called Chovas Hayom Kodemes, that if something is connected not just to the normal cycle of Kodshim, I could bring a carbon today, but it's a carbon that's engendered by the Yom itself, by the Kedush Hayom, that gives it a special status and a special Yichus, and therefore Chovas Hayom Kodemes. Okay. So now we have a machlokas between the Chachamim and Amashol. You're going to have to help me out here because in math I'm very weak. The Chachamim say that Tadir v'sheino tadir kodem, and therefore the Kohanim are enjoined to eat the lechem aponim first, and then afterwards the shtel lechem. Amashol says the opposite, that let them eat the shtel lechem first, because that's called the chovas hayom. Okay, are you going to be my scorecard here? Because I don't have time to write this on the blackboard. So it's very important to know who says what over here. Okay. So comes along Rabbi Zalman, and he asks the following question. So this is four lines up before the end of the page. He says, we're talking about Achilas Kohanim. So what are you going to tell me? You're going to tell me... Oh, just one second. Oh, so you're going to tell me that Lechem Aponim is not a Chovas Hayom, and it only has the Milah of Tadi. So Rashi says, why isn't it a Chovas Hayom? Rashi says, they're in Zvachim, because it's Mishavah She'avra. I don't get it, says Rabbi Zalman. If you're talking about the mitzvah of Hanocha, meaning putting down the lechem upon him on the shulchan, you're right. That's Shabbos Shavra. Exactly. But we can't eat it until when? When is the chiyuv of the mitzvah of eating it? The following Shabbos. So that's also a Chovas Hayom. How could Rashi tell me it's not a Chovas Hayom because it's Shal Shabbos Shavra? Wonderful Shal Shabbos Shavra. But then Shabbos Shavra, there was no mitzvah achila sakonim. The achila sakonim is today v'shabbos. Hayre mitzvah achilosi v'shabbos. This is the day in which we take it off the shulchan. In the mail, it's a chovas hayom. How can Rashi say it's mishabbos shavra? So Mr. Zalman says that he found a sugya in Masechet Yevamos on Daf Mem, and there's a machlokas there again between the same two tanoim, Avishol and the Chachon. What's the case? We Avishol. Mitzvahs achilas karbonos eina al kol kohen befrat ela rotza liochlo rotza kohen achil liochlo. Avishol is of the opinion that you cannot obligate any single individual kohen in the mitzvah achilas kodshin. It has to be eaten, but Reuven doesn't have to eat it. He can give it over to Shimon. Okay? Ein zu ela, we're on top page 354. Ein zu ela mitzvah klolis al atzimur shal hakohen. That's Avishol. Chachamim hold no. The mitzvah is on each coin befrat, and each coin is an obligation to eat the kodshim. Says Rav Zalman, these two machlokasim are interdependent. It's what we call the shitasa. According to Avishol, the achila of karbanos is a mitzvah klolis, correct? If it's a mitzvah klolis, then ein achilas hakarbanos chovas hayom. What does he mean? He means that in general, kodshim have to be eaten, right? But it's not my obligation. It's therefore, it's not part of the Chovas Hayom. Anything that's a Chovas Hayom, which is inherent in the Kedusha Hayom, generates a chiyuv on every single individual, because we all participate in the Kedusha Hayom and we all receive all the obligations that are generated, reflected in the Kedusha Hayom.
The practice of the mitzvah starts the week ago.
Is that a Daniel, give me one more minute. I'll tell you why, because I have a whole footnote over here. Which, just give me one more minute, because I want to see if I can get this straight. But keep in mind what you had to say. Oh. He says, therefore, according to Avishol, shtei alechem kodmin. Why? Because shtei alechem is generated by the kedusha yom shvuas hakovas hayom, and therefore it's incumbent on each particular kohen. That gives it precedence, priority, I guess you say, in sequence over the lechem aponim, because the lechem aponim is just a din in lechem aponim. It has nothing to do with the chovas hayom. Aval chachamim, chacham hold that in general all achilas kodshim is considered chovas hayom, which means that according to the shita of the chachamim, when we have the mitzvah of of whatchamacallit, of the lechem aponim. The lechem aponim is also chovas hayom because it's incumbent upon each individual. Is memela the chachamim argue that the lechem aponim, since it's tadir, has a superior position and gets priority over the shtei lechem? Now, Dodi, what were you going to say? Because I have something that I want to say.
I'm just a slightly different angle, but what I'm saying about shul is that if it's the achila is part of the overall mitzvah lecha upon him, which started the week earlier, so then today is not really the day of the achila.
So that's Rashi's chat. That's Rashi's chat. Rashi's saying that you cannot give a special status to the lechem aponim, because the lechem aponim has nothing to do with this Shabbos; it has to do with last Shabbos.
No, but I'm saying within the way you explain Abba Shaul, that's how I'm hearing it.
Right. Then Abba Shaul, what was Abba Shaul's sheet again? Which comes first? Is Shtei Alechem comes first. Okay, I needed you for that.
Yeah.
Oh, so why does Shtei Alechem come first? Because Abba Shaul holds that in general in Kodshim, unless it's specifically connected to a Kedusha Sayom, then it's a mitzvah klolis and there's no individual obligation. And therefore, in every case of Kodshim, every coin has the right to buck out and pay, or pass the buck, I guess you would say. And therefore, when we get to the Shtei Alechem, now we have a superior status according to the Sheet of Abba Shaul, because it now is a Kedush Sayom, it's a Chovas Hayom. Oh, but here's the part that's a little tricky. I'm going to read it again. This is Rabbi Zalman. He says, Abba Lechachonim, right, the Chachonim who say that in general the mitzvah on every single coin has a yochid to eat the Kodshim, is a Shneem Chovas Hayom. Now that's the point that I'm getting confused about. One second. Just give me one second. That even lechem aponim becomes a chovas hayom. Just one second. I don't get it. You know, I want to say a shtickle Torah here to explain Rabbi Zalman. At the face of it, it doesn't make any sense what he's saying, because he's making a gigantic jump. The Chachamim say that in Kodshim, every individual coin is obligated. That doesn't make it into a Chovas Hayom. That means that there are two ways of learning the mitzvah Achilas Kodshim. One is to say that it's in the Kodshim, and who cares which coin eats it. The other way is to say, no, the Torah says there's a mitzvah Achilas Kodshim, it's incumbent upon any coin who can eat the Kodshim. That doesn't convert it into a Chovas Hayom.
Yeah. Can the achilah get its own significance separate from the carbon? Therefore, because the achilah is today, that's the chovas hayom today.
But let me just read what I wrote. I wrote this morning, so I should remember. Kavanoso, ulai kavanoso, the chovas hayom nosaf al kiyum bechefta shel hakodshim yesh gam kiyum al gavra vehakiyum hazehu biyom atzmo ubekedushas hayom. Is that what you're saying?
But it makes sense.
What were you saying? I was just saying that I don't believe for one moment that since the Chachamim hold that each coin is obligated in the Achila, that therefore it means that there's no kiyum in the carbon itself. There's a kiyum in the carbon itself. And if I see to it that you eat the carbon, the Chacham would agree that's okay. The Chacham only add another dimension. Not only is there kiyum in the heft shel carbon, where I can pass the buck, but there's also an additional chiyuv which Zechovas Gavra comes along with Mr. Zalman, and he identifies or links this Chovas Gavra with the Yom itself. And he wants to suggest that now when we get to Shtei Alechem, it's not just, I'm sorry, did I say Shtei Alechem? I meant to say Lechem Aponim, I'm sorry, I keep making. Right. Now when we get to Lechem Aponim, says Rabbi Zalman, according to the Chachamim Shita, since in addition to the Kiyum Chefta Shal Karma, there's another Chiyum that's incumbent upon each coin to eat the Kodshim, that's a Chovas Gavra, therefore the day itself is Mechayev. I still don't have it. What do you mean the day itself is Mechayev? Yeah, that's not really true. Because let's say I bring a Karma today. What day of the week are we up to? Today's Monday. I also got confused. I thought it was Tuesday. Today is Monday, right? Today's Monday. So today on a Monday, I bring a karma. So there's no Kedush Sayom on Monday, and yet the Chachamim say that I have a chiyuv as a Kohen to eat the kachim. So I don't know why the Chovas Yachid that's incumbent on each Kohen necessarily. I'm missing that one link here. Right, which I don't know.
There's special proxies that have to do with Lechem Aponim.
Yeah.
Lechem Aponim, first of all, they're reserved for certain people. Like the, like half of it is reserved for the Kohenim that are going out.
Say Mishmar, or the Mishmar Yotzeis.
Right. So you can see it's linked carefully to individual Kohenim, so to speak. It's not Al Gemayim. It's not like just I'm anybody. Right. You can't take a portion that isn't it. And number two, it's Mesuyim, that it has to be at that, specifically at that time, when they switch the
right. I think, Abby, what he's saying here is that since on Shabbos you have to eat it,
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's engendered by the Kedusha Yom of Shabbos. That's probably what he means.
What about Abishol?
Abishol is saying that. Yeah, Abishol is saying the following: that if there's no chiyuv on me to eat the karban, then willy nilly we have no choice but to say that it's a din in the heft of the karban, that the heft of the karban has to be eaten. Once you postulate that the heft of the karban needs achila, that's not a chovas hayom. And I would even go a step further.
Specific day,
right? I'm saying the Torah could say that you have such a time allotment to make sure the kachim like right, otherwise it becomes nosar. But I would just insist the following: that even according to Abishol, in the case of Shtel Lechem, this time I got it right, there would be a chiyuv on the Kohen. Why? Because once it's connected to the Kedusha Sayom, the Kedusha Sayom is shared, so to speak. We have an equal partnership. All the Kohenim share in the Kedusha Sayom. There's no reason to obligate one. In other words, say even better than that. Once it's embedded in the Kedusha Sayom, then it's not just that the carbon is related to the carbon itself, the Torah's kachim, you call it algamator, but in addition, it's connected to the yom itself.
Correct.
Oh, so here Abishol's going to have to agree that the Kohen, insofar as he's obligated in the Kedusha Yom, he would have a Chovas Achila. When does Abishol say that there's no Chovas Achila as a Yachid, in terms of each Kohen? That's only when the Kachim are not reflected, or they're not bound, they're not generated by the Kedusha Yom. If it's not generated by the Kedusha Yom, then it's a din in the Heftzah Shol Kodesh. Alright, Rabosai, I see we ran out of time. And I'm a little bit upset with myself because I wanted to finish this last piece. This last piece is absolutely stunning. Mind-boggling. And it goes from 354 till 356 on top. There's one line that you didn't get. So I'm going to leave that for next time because I don't like to keep you over time. It's nice enough that you were able to come now. But, I don't know, Abby, you're going to be here in a week from today?
No.
So can you take this home?
I'll take this.
And do me a favor, go through these pieces here from 354 to 355. I think you'll thank me for it.
Okay.
It's absolutely stunning.
And it's why you take those
off. Right. Okay then, Rabosai, so we'll stop here.
Not put down on Shabbos for some reason. It was impossible for some reason to put it on Shabbos, and they had to be pushed off till Sunday. Say. Then it would still go from Sunday to Sunday, and the mitzvah would be the same mitzvah.
Okay.
That's interesting because if we're saying that, you're talking about Abishol, because Abishol holds it's not connected to the Chovas Hayom.
So we see that this is only a mitzvah.
We would lose nothing as far as that kiyum is concerned.
Exactly. We're saying is the mitzvah is in the
Mashiach. Mashiach came according to the Chachamim, who hold what?
That it's Shabbos,
it's generated by the Kedusha Yom. Then afterwards, then you would mekayim a general kiyum of Chavtzah Shel Karbon. And there, even the Chachamim would agree you could pass the bar.
Right. Right,
I think lack of pollen is unique in its achila. You can't correct any other carbon. Let's not the regular carbon. You bring it and you've got 2 days and a night, wherever it is afterwards, to eat it. There's a pratim in the dinner of that other carbon. There's nothing special about the days that you're eating other by other than.
So if it's definitely a chovas chefter. It's in the chefter of the kodshim. It's a kodshim,
my lord. There's something unique.
It's not a
chovas gavin. There's something unique about lachem apanim. Something you put the new one on, the old one doesn't go the ibud. It goes. Right.
The pella here of Mishnah Torah is his explanation of the chachamim, correct? The chachamim say which comes first? The lechem aponim, correct?
Yeah.
So the kash is, but what about chovas hayom? So the answer is that this also has a kiyum of chovas hayom. And that's a pella. When you think about lechem aponim as a chovas hayom...
Yeah, it's very strange to say that. But
maybe it's part of Kedusha Shabbos. I don't know. You have to, I'm missing a piece of the puzzle.
You can see that even the whole drive of lechem aponim was...